You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. My name is Kyle Porter. I've got Mark Immelman on the line. I've got Doug Bell on the line. Gentlemen, we're talking Genesis Invitational today. It's a big week, so we're starting early. Usually don't do this preview until later in the week. So, I guess just off the top, Mark, I just wrote a column on this, but what about this event, is most exciting to you as we kind of, get into the heart of the golf season?
Well, I mean, it's for me, Kyle, it's what is not exciting. Riviera is just it's an absolute gem. One of the great golf courses on the PGA Tour. You've got Hollywood right there, all of the glitterati, Los Angeles, and then of course the field, man. I mean, we have got just an absolute banner field this week assembling and so around a golf course that asks every question in the book. I mean, you cannot fake it around Riviera. It's going to be really fun from my point of view to see the very best in the game, and, you know, just duke it out a little bit and see who comes out on top on Sunday evening.
Yeah, I agree. This is a tournament that it just got changed to an invitational this year. It's now on par with the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Memorial, which is obviously hosted by Jack Nicklaus. And it's got elevated status. If you win now, you get a three-year exemption on the PGA Tour. The purse is up to almost $10 million, which is crazy. And then the field is reduced down to 120 guys. So it has a real it always had a feel of a special event, but it really seems like this year it's got just sort of this aura. And I don't know how much of that is Tiger hosting it or, you know, what the field looks like. Doug, for you, you wear a lot of hats. You're paying attention to a lot of different stuff. Is now the time in the golf season where you're like, okay, I'm locked in. I really have to start paying attention right now?
You know, I think it starts, it really started at Pebble Beach because people get excited about seeing that visually on television and everybody's so familiar with those holes, especially 17 and 18 and the fact that Phil was in contention, I think got everybody excited. And now you have this tournament at Riviera, as Mark mentioned, this iconic golf course that was built back in the 1920s. And if you go in the clubhouse, you see all these fantastic photos of these movie stars, Humphrey Bogart, Errol Flynn, John Wayne. I mean, all of these incredible movie stars played there. And then you go out to that first tee and you see the first hole down in the valley and you're like, wow, this is really special. And the fact that Tiger is back, Rory, Brooks, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, Bubba Watson. It's a who's who of the great players today. Kyle, it has a major championship feel. And I think people will take note this week. The California swing has been incredible. But I think now all antennas are up. Everybody's radar is cranking. And I can't wait. I simply cannot wait for Thursday to get here. And the fact that Tiger's played so well, Kyle and Mark, I mean, come on now. Golf could not be any better than it is at this moment. And we have a new number one. Rory McIlroy is now the new number one guy. Brooks wants to get it back. Man, there's a zillion storylines. Can't wait.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It does have a major championship feel, and it has a major championship-like field. I mean, if you look at the guys in this tournament, the only top 10 guy that's not playing is the guy that won last, which was Webb Simpson at the Phoenix Open. All the top five guys. I mean, if you go down the list, it's not just the top 10 guys in the world. You got Sergio. You've got guys like Matthew Wolf. I mean, there's just so many guys in that. Bubba Watson's playing great. There's so many guys in this field that you're like, wow, that guy could win this week. I'm really excited about, what this field looks like. Mark, if I asked you to make the case for me, so Tiger's playing, this is his third start of the season. He's obviously again going for his 83rd PGA Tour win. If I asked you to make the case for me for why Tiger will not win, I think it's pretty easy to make the case for why he will. Everybody knows he's playing great. His swing looks great. He's, you know, ranked number 8 in the world right now. Make the case for me for why Tiger might not win this weekend at Riviera.
And you're putting me on the spot. honestly, Carl, the only reason, if I'm making a case why he wouldn't win, because look, the way he's swinging it right now, the way he's driving the golf ball, which is even more important because Riviera asks you to move the ball in both directions. And if you're playing from the fairway with that Kikuyu grass rough, you've got the leg up on the competition because typically the greens are fairly small, lots of undulations, so you have to be able to control the ball out the fairway. But all that being said, if there is an Achilles heel in Woods' arsenal, which there really isn't, but if he struggles, it's on Poano greens. Because the one thing about Woods, we did see it at Torrey Pines some. He hit the ball great, but it, on the greens, had one or two bounce. He had that four putt on the first green there, which was incomprehensible, really. So I think if there was a case to be made why he wouldn't pull off the victory, it would just be he doesn't appear as comfortable on Poano as what he does when he plays down there in Florida on the Champions grass or on bent grass, like he's just cleaned house in Ohio, the state of Ohio. So that for me is the case. But, you know, I say that with tongue in cheek because the guy has made some unreal putts on Poano. There was one on the final green in the 08 US Open in San Diego that speak to otherwise. So, you know, this is a difficult assignment, but I'm going to go with the greens.
Doug, do you get concerned that Tiger's never won here? He's teed it up, I think, 11 times over the course of his career. No, that's not right. I don't know how many times. He's teed it up quite a few times here, never won. This is where he got his PGA Tour start back as an amateur at 16 years old in 1991. Do you get concerned about how many times he's played it and not actually won at this course?
Yeah, I mean, he's a Southern California guy. And the fact that he did make his debut in 1992 as a 16-year-old phenom, you would have thought, and the way the course sets up, he was so long as a young man, and it really favors the long hitter, the ball striker, and those are two things that he certainly was as a young man, and still a great iron player now. But it's mind-boggling that he hasn't won there. But again, in 2006, he quit playing. For a variety of reasons, whether it was the schedule or whether it was injury or whether it was the fact that he just had no success there. And then it was good to see him come back last year. But remember now, Jack Nicklaus never won the Canadian Open, and that's a head-scratcher. Tiger has never won at Riviera. That's a head-scratcher. So it happens. It's hard to put your finger on why. I thought Mark had some good reasons. But the one thing that you can point out now, and Kyle, you mentioned it, Tiger's swing looks phenomenal, and his statistics are off the charts. And who's to say the great Tiger Woods won't get win number 83 and pass Sam Snead this week? I mean, listen, I'm not putting anything by this guy because I didn't think he'd be where he is now about a year ago.
Well, it would be a really good spot for it because, you know, the 83rd win, you want it to it'd be weird if it happened at a major because the major would kind of overshadow 83. This would be the ideal place, a place he's never won, a place where he's the host of the event, and in a loaded field, in a major like field. I think that, if it's going to happen, and I think it will, I think this would be the perfect spot for it to happen. I guess you could talk about Memorial or Arnold Palmer or something like that later on in the year, but it would be pretty cool if it happened here. Another guy would be pretty cool if he won this week, Rory McIlroy, new world number one. This is his 96th week as the number one player in the world. He overtook Brooks Koepka, who in the fall said he's got nothing but open road in front of him. Now he's got nothing but Rory McIlroy in front of him as the number one guy. So, Mark, just you saw Rory at Farmers, at Torrey Pines. Is his game as good as it's been in the last 10 years? Because for me, just watching from outside looking in, his swing, his mental state, everything he's got going on seems about as good as it can be right now.
Yes, all of the above. Rory has just got it going on right now. And there's an air of comfortability about him to me as I watch him play too, Kyle, because we all know he's a generational talent. The way he drives the ball, the way he strikes it, the game comes easy to him, where certain folks have to grind really hard. He's cleaned up the short game woes. He's been banner on the greens, really, which has been the Achilles heel, if anything. But for me, it looks like he's just got a healthy dose of perspective. He's got golf exactly where it needs to be in his life. It doesn't look to me like he's defining himself by what his score is. But that being said, you can still see the hunger in him. So he's very balanced in the approach. He's obviously got all the physical assets in the world. So, saying, is this the best he's ever been? That's a hard deal because he was younger and pretty vigorous when he was winning all those major championships in a short space of time. But I certainly would say that right now, where he is, his game is complete. There's not a weakness. Mentally, he looks like he's under control. Emotionally, looks like he's quite comfortable with who he is in the game. And it appears almost like he plays with house money, because if he never wins another major, will it sting? Sure. But it doesn't look like it's that bothersome to him, because he's just going about his business and doing what he has to do. And so it's a pretty impressive sight to behold, and watching him at full flight right now is something special.
Yeah, since the beginning of 2019, he's got more wins than he has missed cuts, and he has just 6 finishes outside the top 10 in tournaments. And in that span of time, he's got 15 top 6 finishes. So over twice as many times in the last year plus, he's finished in the top 6 as he has finished outside the top 10. So he's just an auto top 10, top 5 guy right now. And I don't know. I don't think any of those guys care about being number 1 as much as we think that they do. But I also don't think it's nothing, and I think I think it's a meaningful thing for him to. Go ahead.
No, I was about to say you. I was just going to add on to what you said. Sorry to cut over you, but you bring up a really good point. But the thing about that number one ranking, you know, they all say it doesn't mean much. Rory here recently said, you know, that's not one of the goals that was on his list to start the year. But if you caught him last year, he actually referenced getting back to number one. The thing that the number one ranking in the official World Golf ranking says is that you have been consistent over a period of time. And so it sort of recognizes someone who's been consistently good. So to those numbers you point out, all those top fives, all those top tens, all the victories and such, his body of work over the last couple of years, year and a half, whatever it's been, has been really sound. So I think this number one ranking is well-deserved and indicative of really what he's been up to.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, if you talk to anybody within the sport and say, hey, who's the best guy over the last 14 months? I don't think you're getting an answer other than Rory. And I think I was thinking about this. One of the most impressive things to me is if you go, back to, I think it was March 2012, he becomes number one in the world. He took it over from, I think, Luke Donald, maybe Lee Westwood. And all the way to February 2020, you've been the best guy in your sport. That far apart, that doesn't happen in a lot of sports. We see some guys kind of rise to the top or these surges for a couple years, but to maintain it at that level and for, I think, almost all of it, if not all of it, inside the top 10, that's a pretty remarkable thing. So yeah, I'm excited to see him play at Riviera.
Along those lines too, sorry, Doug, one more thing. I saw a statistic that our folks last week, the Pebble Beach, put out, where if he stays number one, I believe it's for 2 more weeks, yeah, he overtakes Nick Faldo on the all-time weeks holding the number one spot, and then he'll be third all-time behind, I think it was Greg Norman and Tiger Woods, and that speaks to what he's been up to as well. So in many respects, it's a feather in his cap.
What were you going to say, Doug?
I was going to add, you know, I was in Memphis at that World Golf Championship event when Brooks and Rory were in that final pairing, and Brooks took him down. Brooks outplayed him. And then we saw at the Tour Championship, I saw a fire in the belly of Rory McIlroy in Atlanta at East Lake that I had never seen before. You know, this guy's talented, but when you walk inside the ropes with these guys, and I mean, you see facial expressions, and you see, you know, in a bad time, this is meaningful stuff, and he really wanted that Tour Championship for a lot of reasons. That obviously earned him the Player of the Year and the FedEx Cup. And listen, I really believe he wanted to be number one, wants to stay number one. And when you get right down to it, And Kyle, you were talking about the stats, and Mark, I mean, you've been up close to this guy. Listen, there's a lot of people that drive the ball well. A lot of people hit those fairway woods well. But man, when you get right down to it, there's nobody better, pound for pound, than Rory McIlroy. It is a sight to behold to watch him wheel, get that wheel going and get that shoulder and everything in position and slam that driver in that three wood. And again, I think Riviera sets up perfectly for Rory McIlroy as he gets to Tinseltown as the number one player in the world again. I think he wanted to get there, and I think he wants to keep it for a long time.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting to watch him play. There's a great article, or there's a series of articles. Mark and I referenced this a little bit on Sunday after Pebble. In the Irish Independent, he does this really long interview, and one of the most interesting things I took out of that was he was talking about Torrey last year, and he finished like T6 or T4 or something. And he said it was like the most, I can't remember the word he used, I think maybe like most proud he's ever been of how he played, because he said he didn't have it. He just didn't have it from tee to green, and he's chipping in, and he's basically like, he's being Jordan Spieth, and he's stealing scores when they shouldn't be there. And if that's the Rory that I'm getting, I don't know that you're getting that every week, but if you're getting that from him for long periods of time, that's terrifying, because, you know, that's the thing where it's like, it's always been, well, if he doesn't have it, then, you know, it's just not his week. He's not, whatever. That's just not his style. But if he can add that to his game, and I think a lot of that is mental, you know, he talks a lot about that. That is, if I'm another top guy, that's completely terrifying for me.
Hey, Kyle, I thought the most interesting thing in that article was that he was a member of your book club. That was my big takeaway from that article.
Okay, let's talk about Brooks Koepka. So Brooks Koepka is now the number two player in the world. And I think the thing that I think about when I think about Brooks, it's like, okay, he goes to Abu Dhabi, finishes T34. He goes to Saudi Arabia, finishes T17. And you're like, okay, I mean, that's fine. He withdrew from the CJ Cup in the fall. Before that, he was cut. Those are his last four starts. That's, you know, I could tell you those are Scott Stallings' last four starts, and you'd be like, yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like. But do either of you, I guess we'll start with you, Mark, do you get concerned about a slow start from Brooks, or is this just kind of like who he is at the beginning of the year?
No, this is Brooks. Look, I mean, we've had this conversation ad nauseum with, you know, why doesn't Brooks show up in regular PGA Tour events? So now he's gone over to Europe. He's went for some of the big money over there. He's easing his way into the season post surgery and post the knee up. I didn't see any ill effects. There were a few swings because he plays with that very closed club face. So as a result, he's got to really rotate the body hard, and that forward leg of his, at the pace that he goes, it takes a lot of torque. And so there was one or two where he didn't get through it as well as what he should, and he missed the ball left. But, you know, that's also some rust as you play your way back into the high-speed game that is professional golf. So I'm not concerned. Brooks knows what Brooks has got to do, and I think that's the one thing that none of the pundits ever recognize. You know, they talk about Brooks and the way he plays and the chip on the shoulder and such. But to me, as I watch Brooks Koepka, it looks like he understands his recipe, and that is all he does. He's actually said as much in major championships, where he said, in every major championship, I have the same setup at the house, I have the same chef, I have the same routine, and so he knows what he's got to do to bring out his best, and I'm sure he's going through what he needs to do right now, and so I'm not concerned by the start. I really am not. He's the kind of guy who's that resilient, and he's got that strong a mind, and clearly he understands what he's got to do, and when it means something, he'll start showing up.
Do you consider yourself a pundit, Mark?
Not really. I'm given CBS gave me the title analyst. I guess that for what it's worth, I've got that.
So, Doug, the comparison that I've made with Koepka is he's kind of like Kawhi Leonard, to where you see flashes in the regular season, you're like, wow, this guy's like the best player in the world. But then it doesn't really click into place until the postseason. For golf, it's obviously the major championships. Do you agree with that assessment? Do you agree with that comparison, or is that off base?
No, I kind of like that. You know, the thing with Kawhi, you know, he can be so great when he wants to be, and then suddenly he takes a night off because that's what I do. You know, he takes a lot of nights off And I think Koepka right now has been taking some time off. Obviously, he's injured, guys, and he's not quite 100% yet, but he's working his way back. I mean, whenever a golfer is dealing with joints, whether it's knees or elbows or shoulders, or in the case of Tiger Woods, you know, his back, it's going to take time. It's going to be ticklish. And I think that's what's happened with Brooks. You know, he injured his knee, thought he was good again, then re-injured the knee. And he's an athlete. And that's the thing with these modern golfers. They are athletic much more than they used to be. And I think in the case of Brooks Koepka, he's just slowly getting back into shape. And again, guys, Riviera, as we talked about, sets up perfectly for a guy who hits it a long way and is a terrific ball striker. So we'll see if Brooks Koepka can get out of the gates quickly. I'm not expecting it. I think he's going to play better when the swing gets down to Florida, especially Honda, which is his hometown. But it'll be good to see him get back. But I'm not expecting the same Brooks Koepka for a while, because I think it's going to take him a while to get 100% healthy.
Another guy who hits it a long way is a great ball striker, Justin Thomas. He played really well at this tournament last year. He started 66, 65, 65. And I don't know if you guys remember, but it was that weird, there was like a rain delay and they played like a ton of holes on, I think it was Saturday. And I think he shot 65, 65 on Saturday in like the second and third round or something weird like that. And then you're like, wow. Or maybe they played two rounds on Sunday. Anyway.
Sunday, yeah.
JT goes out and shoots a 75 in the final round on Sunday, which to me, I thought that was one of the more surprising outcomes of the year, just because that number wasn't really out there. Jordan Spieth shot an 81. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the other guys in the top 10, you see 68s, you see 69s. Siwoo Kim shot a 66 on Sunday. And JT, who I feel like is a closer, 75 to lose to JB Holmes by one. What do you think about the way that he's playing right now, Mark, and just his game coming off that I think it was T3 at Phoenix, and heading into kind of this part of the season?
Well, a couple of things. First off, the round last year, I want to say that not all 75s are the same. Same thing for 66s. Kim was out early. It was blustery. It was cold last year. And in the final group, the greens really started to firm up and get kind of crusty. So if you were above holes, I mean, guys were having a torrid time, and it was basically just a war of attrition. So that 75, I don't think, was a perfect indication of what happened. And it's not like he choked, really. You know, certainly JB outlasted him. But the guys who shot the low rounds were early on a very difficult day, almost like it was final round at Pebble Beach last week. So there's that. But as far as JT, he is complete. And the thing about him here at Riviera is he's a picker of the golf ball. And off those Kikuyu fairways, the ball perks up a little bit. And so it sits up. So you can really, you know, make the shallow approach with a golf swing and hoist balls in the air and hit different shots off those lies. And his technique lends itself to success from those sorts of fairways. So with those greens, if he comes in there swinging well, which I expect him to. I spoke briefly with his father, Mike, in Phoenix a few weeks ago, and I asked what they were up to, and he said, same as always, just making sure the backswing's online and the shaft is on plane coming down. So I read between the lines and I hear, okay, this is a dude where there's nothing really sinister going on with a golf swing. He knows what he's going to do. He's doing his thing, and the statistics are bearing them out. And this is your chapter.
Here we go. Stuff.
But
yeah.
But still, I mean, I think there's only one statistic where he's not inside of the top 20 currently on the PGA Tour, and he's becoming a titan in the game, and he's complete, and Riviera sets up to his sort of golf swing style.
Well, let's be honest, Mark. JB Holmes outlasts everybody, no matter who's playing alongside of him. I think. I remember what you're talking about with Justin Thomas and Adam Scott shot like a 76 also, and it got that was such a weird event because there were so many holes played.
It was really late.
The weather was weird. To your point, Justin Thomas, PGA Tour season stats right now, he's 17th off the tee, 6th on approach shots, 34th around the green. fourth tee to green and fourth overall. He's 85th in putting, which to me is concerning if I'm anybody else in the field. We talked about if Rory's got that kind of mental makeup where he's like grinding stuff out. If JT is playing this well and not even putting yet, I mean, he's a good putter. He's a top 50, top 40 putter to me. That's another like, that has 3, 4, 5 win season written all over it. Doug, do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's destined for, perhaps a career year. Last year was injured down at the Honda. And again, I was walking with him, for PGA Tour Radio when he hit that root underneath the tree at the ninth hole. And he never really was the same until he won in the playoffs. But now that he's already won twice in this new 19-20 season. And, you know, guys, I like the way he and his dad, and he calls it his team, but I like the way they have the schedule mapped out, because you play twice in Hawaii, you come back to the States, take a couple of weeks off, you play in Phoenix, you do not play in Pebble, you're going to play Riviera, Mexico, Honda. And so we'll have a nice 3-week stretch, and I think he'll be humming by the time he gets to Honda, by the way, if not before. But again, he's healthy, and I think your stats, Kyle, bear out that right now he is blossoming into, he very easily could be the number one player at the end of the year. I think he's that good. He's going to be on the Olympic team. I do believe that's something that he's really focusing on. So Justin Thomas, if he's not a household name to a lot of people yet, he will be after this season. Because I think you're right. I think we're looking at a huge year for JT.
Hey, Kyle, there are a handful of guys on the PGA Tour, in my opinion, who can out-hit a bad putter. Rory, Dustin Johnson, Tiger to a certain extent now, and Justin Thomas. So if, even at 85th, he's gaining strokes. He's 85th, but he is gaining strokes, albeit a small percentage. But the way he's hitting it right now, the way he hit it en route to the victory here recently, he can get by a bad putter pretty easily just for the quality of the golf swing.
I would throw Hideki in there as well. That's all he's been doing his entire career is overcoming a bad putter, out-hitting a bad putter. okay, so we got who else do we have in here? We got Bubba Watson, John Rahm. Jordan, this field is a joke, guys. It's unbelievable. You start going down and you're like, the 30th guy in this could win it. Bubba Watson, real quick, 3-time winner here, 14, 16, 18. It's an even number year. He'll probably win again. Mark, he's had a weird last couple years, but he is entering, with 2 straight top 10s, into this event. Played great at Phoenix, where he always seems to play great. Is this a tournament that you could see him going out and winning and then using that to maybe catapult him to yet another contention at Augusta here in 2 months?
Well, Bubba's the kind of guy where if he doesn't feel too hemmed in, you know, he can play Bubba golf where he hits all that bend to the golf balls and such, which is kind of odd because at Riviera, there's certain spots. I think of holes like, on the backside, 11, 12, there's 15 or a tough par 4 where it sort of asks you to really be tied off the tee. So I find it somewhat surprising that he plays so well there, but we know he's an emotional sort. And when he gets to certain places, he finds that different gear just because of the emotions and the mentality of it. So the way he's going right now, he seemed awfully confident. I spoke briefly with Ted Scott in Phoenix a few weeks ago, and he said Bubba's just hitting the ball perfect. And he's making some putts, which is crucial at this level. And so, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's a part of the storyline. He's going to have to reach up and grab some pretty special form if he wants to win, given the strength of the field this week.
Doug, do you agree with that?
I think Bubba has exceeded his expectations with major championships, double-digit victories on the PGA Tour, more money than you can ever dream about. He's got a beautiful family. And I really, in my mind, he's kind of moved to that level of enjoying life. And, maybe he works as hard as he used to. I don't know. But I just think when you have these young guys that we're talking about, whether it's Rory or Brooks or JT or John Rahm. You know, there's just so many young guys, and I don't want to say Bubba's not going to win again because I think he's ultra talented, but I think he has reached his peak, and I think he's enjoying the fruits of his labor. And that's not a negative. I just think a lot of athletes, when they reach their prime and they've enjoyed ultra success, it's hard for many of them, no matter what sport, to get back to that level that they enjoyed at the prime of their careers.
Yeah, and a couple other guys who have enjoyed success at that level, and I kind of grouped these guys together as I was thinking about this. So Phil, Bubba, and Jordan Spieth, they've all won at Augusta. Bubba and Phil have both won twice at Riviera, and Spieth has contended there. He finished T4 back in, I think that was 15, when he went on to win the John Deere. I think all three of those guys, they're all kind of – they all started the year, Mark, just kind of – lackluster. Like, they're all kind of going in the wrong direction, haven't had a great last year or two. Who out of those guys do you think is – so all three of them are surging. Phil's got two top threes in a row. Spieth rounded the day on Sunday at Pebble. Bubba, two top tens in a row. Who out of those do you think is for real, and who do you see faltering over the next, you know, 3 or 4 months?
Oh, goodness, that is a really good question, and I'm not so sure I could give you a real answer to this, because every single one of those players, albeit the fact that they're just very talented, to use Doug's term, ultra talented, great golfers, assembled incredible resumes. Phil's already in the Hall of Fame. Bubba, you know, he's close given what he's been up to, and Spieth with the three majors. They all are fallible in a funny sort of a way. You know, if we compare them to a Justin Thomas or to a Rory, who seem kind of complete right now, even a Patrick Cantlay, I'll toss into that heap, where you've got the overall game and there's the mental acumen with it. So I guess of the group at Riviera, if this is a very long question, I'd be inclined to go with Jordan because it looks like he's going in the right direction. But if we're looking towards Riviera this week, I've sort of got to go with Phil. I really do. I mean, he spoke last week of being uncomfortable with winds that come in and off his right hand side because they exposed that wide left miss that he'd been struggling. And there were a number of holes coming down the stretch, even though it was a war of attrition late yesterday afternoon in Pebble Beach, where he was able to hit like a low flighted driver that went a long ways but stayed in play. So, if we get sort of similar conditions in LA, I feel like now Phil will continue the good play.
Doug, since Mark won't answer my questions when I throw them in front of him, which of those three guys – I'm just kidding, Mark. Which of those three guys would you take if you had to pick somebody for the rest of the year?
Wow. Well, you know, I followed Phil a lot at Pebble Beach, and I did think he looked fatigued, especially that back nine on Sunday. But again, the wind was howling. Those conditions were just – ridiculous. You know, I'd probably have to go with Phil simply because I think he is taking advantage of modern science. You know, whatever the case may be, whether it's physically, you know, he's lost a lot of weight, looks terrific, and he seems to have a bounce in his step. And certainly scientifically, from a golf standpoint, I mean, he's taking advantage of the equipment. He's certainly swinging it faster than he ever has, hitting it farther. You know, it is interesting, when he first came out on tour, Phil Mickelson, of course, it was a long time ago, guys. I mean, he's 49 years old. This is his 28th year on the PGA Tour, but he averaged, just about 268 yards off the tee. And now here we are, he'll be 50 in June, and he's averaging, 305 yards off the tee. So, pretty remarkable, and when you look at those swing videos and the elasticity of his swing and how far he still gets it over parallel, pretty remarkable for a man his age. So I guess to answer your question, Kyle, I'd have to go with Lefty. I still think he's got a little gas left in the tank.
Hey, Kyle, I did say I was picking Spieth for the year. You obviously didn't listen to my entire diatribe. Come on now.
You hate my questions so much, which is fantastic. Okay, last two guys that I want to touch on real quick. Two guys that have had very opposite kind of last 6 to 8 months, and that's John Rahm, who's been awesome since last summer. I mean, just an unbelievable run that he's been on. And then Dustin Johnson, who has not been awesome. He didn't have any top 10s after the PGA Championship last year. He did have a T7 at the Tournament of Champions to start 2020, and then he went over to Saudi Arabia, finished second there. But then he dropped back to T32 at last week's Pebble Beach Pro-Am. If I give you those guys, Mark, do you buy high on Rahm, or are you buying low on DJ and hoping that kind of the trend that he's on improves over the rest of the year?
Man, you're putting me on the spot with some of these expert questions of yours.
This is the deal, Mark. This is, you know.
This is incisive. I mean,
gloves are off.
Stuff. You know what? You've got to buy high on John Rahm. I was surprised that he didn't finish it off at Torrey, and I then was as surprised, if not more, that he just couldn't find a way to make a putt when it meant something at Phoenix. He hit the ball well the entire week. So I think there's a bit of a chip on the shoulder there with John Rahm, so I'm buying high because he is an emotional sort. But the thing about Dustin, a few years ago when he won at Riviera, it was one of the most dominating performances I've ever seen. The guy didn't put the ball on the short side of the flag once. He managed himself. He managed his game well. He made the putts that it needed to. And he basically looked like he beat a good field at a canter. He wasn't even full flight. So I think the issues with Dustin Johnson are short-lived. I feel like he goes back to a place now where a place where he's comfortable. And if you're comfortable, some of these guys, they just find that little spark. And he's the kind of guy that when you get something going, he can parlay that into a few big finishes. So I'd be more inclined to just edge towards Rahm right now, but I'm not going to discount DJ whatsoever.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Mark. I don't like buying guys as high as Rahm is right now because he's really on a heater. But the DJ stuff, I don't know. Like it's a very small sample size, but he's like 10th in putting right now, but not really producing great finishes. I mean, that's the thing. Like people look at DJ and they're like, oh, I can't putt. It's like, look at his numbers the last few years. He's been an amazing putter. I think he finished like top 20 last year, and he's just not hitting it well. And he hasn't been for, you know, 6, 8, 10 months. Doug, which side of this are you on in terms of John Rahm and Dustin Johnson?
Well, you know, I was just looking at the odds, guys. John Rahm, 8-1 at Riviera, DJ 14-1. So, you know, if I was a betting guy, I might put a little money on DJ this week, especially with his track record there. I talked to Dustin at Pebble, and he was playing with Wayne Gretzky, which is always kind of a neat deal to see the great one. With his son-in-law DJ, and I think that is something that really has always motivated Dustin Johnson. And I think when he spends a little time with Wayne, I think that gets his head back on right. So, listen, he keeps winning year in and year out. And he has for a long time, Dustin Johnson. I kind of like DJ getting back, bouncing back, because I think if there's a sure thing in golf, I don't know if there is a sure thing, but I think it's a sure thing that Dustin Johnson will win again this year, just like he has for the last 12 years.
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with you in terms of like the bigger picture view. I mean, I think DJ is like maybe the most talented guy in terms of just raw ability. And he's improved his putting and his short game stuff a ton. People talk about like the wedges, but his putting, I mean, just go look up the numbers if you're listening, because it's been really impressive the last few years. So both those guys should be a lot of fun to follow at Riviera this weekend. That's a wrap for us, guys. I could do this all day. We could go all the way down to Sergio, and I mean, I could go forever, but we're going to wrap it right here. We're going to have a ton of coverage later on in the week. And yeah, thanks for joining. Doug Bell, Mark Edelman, appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Ready? Right, thanks,
guys.
Hey! Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.